Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis, as always. And today, those definitions, I think, actually hold pretty well. We'll start, obviously, with the good. We go back to Obamacare. It was just a couple of days ago. We were really depressed that 42% of the American people had no idea Obamacare was the law of the land. It's pretty pathetic. But the good news is that the polls that exist, even if people don't really know if it is the law, they think it should be repealed. 54% in Fox News think that, and at least a plurality in every poll that has been conducted recently says that as well. The further good news is that Democrats are seeing this more and more, as Max Baucus said, as a train wreck. Even Harry Reid recently says if it's not implemented correctly, it could be a train wreck. Of course, he still thinks it's going to be fine. You're going to see more and more Democrats running away from that, particularly in the midterm. In fact, Elizabeth Colbert Bush was trying to run away from it in her debate with Mark Sanford earlier in the week. Jim, it was obviously a big issue for Republicans in theory, as National Journal points out, in 2010, before there were any even harmful effects of it. But now that people will probably see quite a few harmful effects throughout most of 2014, job uncertainty, employer uncertainty, premiums going through the roof, Democrats are going to be playing defense even more.
Remember, this is a bill that passed with absolutely no support from Republicans whatsoever. So Democrats can't say, well, we were all did this together. And, you know, this was something that they forced upon the country. It was never popular. Obviously, the numbers that, you know, 40-some percent of Americans weren't sure that Obamacare was still in effect or was still a law is depressing. But over at 538 site on the New York Times, they go through, look, what they're asking Fox News, Kaiser, Quinnipiac, or New York Times. The bottom line is that it's unpopular. It can either be a little bit unpopular or it's a lot popular. Approval topping out about 41% and disapproval anywhere from 40 to 54%. So basically the gist being that this is not popular legislation. Intriguingly, the no opinion or I don't know is coming up. And it's kind of interesting. It's like it's very strange. The closer it gets, the vaguer it seems, the more uncertain this legislation seems. One of the things that jumped out at me this morning, we're talking about somebody who knows how to make a comparison that will make your eyes pop out, Josh Krashauer of National Journal, I'm probably mangling his name there, says, like the Iraq War tarnished the Republican brand, Obamacare could be a long-term political millstone for Democrats. But, and you start thinking, well, wait a second. Iraq killed people, the Iraq War. Oh, wait a minute. The Obamacare has got death panels. At some point, they're going to start turning down. The Obamacare's rules and regulations, at some point, are probably going to get somebody killed at this rate. And so he goes through it. And what's really kind of intriguing, we touched about this a little bit earlier in the week, President Obama can't really say, well, we all knew this would be have some problems. No, he didn't talk about any problems. This was supposed to be super duper terrific. And there was no sense of this being a you know, very complicated, well, we're going to have problems. Please be patient. We're working our way through this thing. And even today, he had to say, well, look, for most people, Obamacare is in effect and it's just fine. And anyone who studies the issue is saying, well, actually, that's not an accurate characterization of how the implementation of this law is going so far. Here's the thing. The Iraq War, you could argue, is a political problem for the Republican Party even today. We see when we see the polling numbers on Syria that Americans are feeling very isolationist, very disinclined to take any type of military action in the Middle East or anything like that. But if you louse up the American healthcare system and people feel like they can't get access to their doctor, I have a feeling, you know, you could kind of tune out the Iraq War. You can't tune out your inability to go see your doctor. And that could be a very big political factor in our nation for the next decade to come, really.
Republican candidates around the country will be very smart to hammer that home, particularly in races with Democratic incumbents. A lot of Democrats, particularly in the Senate, are deciding not to even go into the fight this year. See Max Baucus, Carl Levin, Jay Rockefeller, and some of these others. But if you're running against Mark Pryor or Mary Landrieu or some of these other folks who are definitely vulnerable, that should be a major focal point in your ad. So hopefully Bill Cassidy and whoever ends up being the Republican nominee in Arkansas makes that a point. Let's move on to martini number two now, because Benghazi is back in the news. Fox News has done a bunch of reporting lately about some of these folks who are frustrated that they've not been able to tell what happened. These are the survivors of Benghazi, and the administration is just acting shocked, Jim, that these folks feel like they don't have the opportunity to come forward. So a couple of different things on the Benghazi front. First of all, here's Ed Henry of Fox News throwing out a question to Jay Carney, whose response did not win him many points yesterday.
If they were to come forward, is the White House willing to let them testify?
Well, again, I mean, that's a hypothetical, but let's be clear. Benghazi happened a long time ago. We are unaware of any agency blocking an employee who would like to appear before Congress to provide information related to Benghazi.
Terrible answer on a number of fronts. That shouldn't be a hypothetical.
A long time ago, Greg, Benghazi is in a galaxy far, far away. It is in Libya, which is not far from the Tunisian town of Tatooine. You think I'm making that up? There actually, honest to God, is a Tunisian town called Tatooine, which, by the way, is near where they filmed Star Wars, and almost certainly where George Lucas got the name. Inserting a little bit of Star Wars geek trivia in an otherwise miserable bit of news. Kind of transparent lying. I guess you could say the good part of this bad martini is Aaron Burnett is kind of asking, like, really it took 8 months to release photos of the folks who you know, the three guys were questioning, which I know it'll shock you, by the way. The people who are wanted for questioning in relation to the attack in Benghazi are North African-looking young men in robes carrying AK-47s. I would never have guessed that to be what the kind of the description of the suspect to be on the lookout for. And so it's a really fair question. Why did it take 7 months to bring out these photos? This cannot be that they just got these photos. You know, there's no reasonable explanation for this. So the most reasonable explanation for this is the administration wants the Benghazi story to go away. They don't want serious looking at what were the decisions made regarding security in the run-up to it. They don't want serious review of the decisions made on the night of the attacks and whether there were serious options to rescue these folks that the administration chose not to use out of, you know, fear of a, you know, Black Hawk Down type situation or for whatever the reasons were. And they don't want any serious examination of their explanations in the immediate aftermath of it. What's really kind of intriguing is that, you know, when Obama gets into these circumstances, and I think we'd say the same thing about what we're seeing in Boston, the line is always, let's not have any rush to judgment. We're still gathering the facts. We don't do this on the timetable of the short attention span media. Be patient, people. And then, you know, some time goes by, you ask him, oh, God, this is old news. This is ancient history. Goodness, why are you bringing this up? And at no point, you know, there's like apparently a 30-second window in which it's appropriate to ask questions about these things. As a result of that, we basically never get any serious questions answered. So,
on to martini number three now, the crazy martini. We go back to the Virginia governor's race. Ladies in particular, I would like you to pay close attention to martini number three today. Terry McAuliffe currently is running an ad in the four major metropolitan markets of Virginia, kind of one of these soft, touchy-feely biography ads. Ken Cuccinelli is airing one as well in some of these major markets. And McAuliffe's major point in this ad is that he's lived in this state for 20 years. He's raised five kids in this state. He's not a carpetbagger. He's really got roots here. But Jim has done an excellent job of digging up this excerpt from Terry McAuliffe's autobiography. I think this could be formed into a political ad with the title Priorities. Here's exactly how Terry McAuliffe describes the aftermath of the birth of one of his children.
Dorothy was starting to well up in the back seat. She was having trouble understanding how I could be taking my wife and newborn baby to a fundraiser on our way home from the hospital. We got to the dinner, and by then Dorothy was in tears. And I left her with Justin and went inside. Little Peter was sleeping peacefully, and Dorothy just sat there, and poor Justin didn't dare say a word. He was mortified. I was inside maybe 15 minutes, said a few nice things about Marty, and then hurried back out to the car. I felt bad for Dorothy, but it was $1 million for the Democratic Party, and by the time we got home and the kids had their new little brother in their arms, Dorothy was all smiles, and we were one big happy family again. Nobody ever said life with me was going to be easy.
Jim, I'm not sure what's more appalling about this, the fact that he did it or the fact that it's clear from the way he wrote this and read this that he doesn't see anything wrong with this whatsoever.
By the way, should we give credit where it's due? It's Andrew Andrew over at BuzzFeed.
Oh, okay.
With a really long name that starts with a K, who first spotlighted this yesterday or really put the focus on this in light of the new ad talking about how much Terry McAuliffe loves being a dad and, you know, the cute pictures of him with his child being born. Worth noting, by the way, also when he talks, oh, I've lived in this state for more than 20 years. He's 56 years old. No, actually, so it's not like, you know, when he says I've been here for 20 years, almost a third of his life, Greg. That's some deep roots. And, of course, it's McLean and it's, you know, the wealthy suburbs of D.C. And while he's technically probably, you know, registered to vote and living in Virginia, he's been working in D.C. basically every day of his entire life. And all that. But anyway, so he has this bizarre story of stopping at a fundraiser on the way home from the hospital with his newborn child. I've been whacking this guy around like a pinata, so I felt like let's give him one molecule of credit and or sympathy, that this would be the sort of thing it would be very easy for him to leave out of his autobiography. Clearly, it's not a moment that he – and it sounds semi-ashamed, at least on the page. And then you read the – listen to the words as he in the audiobook version. He seemed kind of cheerful about it, doesn't he, Greg? Like, you know, like, this is just the kind of wacky, obsessive, compulsive fundraiser I am. And so I suppose we can give a little bit of credit for honesty and for showcasing a moment that most people would look at and say, what a horrifying character flaw and defect. If this is him describing himself in his own words, maybe we should take that warning for what it is. And just a guy who just kind of crazy and obsessed. I wrote a bit about him back in early February, looking through the autobiography. I pointed out that he says, for $500,000, I don't mind humiliating myself for 5 minutes. I classify that remark as saying, you see, Virginians? Standards. You know, it's got to be at least a $500,000 for he'll be humiliating himself. You know, because you don't want to humiliate yourself for chump change, but as governor of a state, for enough money, you'd be willing to humiliate yourself. And then, of course, his kind of closing comment about, this is just the kind of crazy guy I am. Nobody ever said life with me was going to be easy. Boy, heck of a gubernatorial campaign slogan, huh, Greg? You know, right now, you know, as Democrats are groaning, we can tell them, look, we warned them. Nobody ever said life with Terry McAuliffe as your gubernatorial nominee was going to be easy. So now, as wacky and crazy and as much fun we have as, you know, watching every Democrat bang their heads against the wall in frustration, we do now have to be on alert for the Torricelli maneuver. I mean, if you thought Mitt Romney's dog on the roof was a story that's going to hurt you with that with a particular demographic, how about, I made my wife has given birth just a few days ago, my child is crying. Hang on here, honey, I got to go to that. And then there's another story in which he goes to a Washington Post party while his wife is in the hospital and not yet giving labor and stuff.
Jim, I just learned about this story this morning, so I haven't had a chance to talk about it with my wife, although I can pretty much guess how she would react to this if I had tried something like this. Did you run this by Mrs. Campaign Spot? I'm sure she thought it was perfectly acceptable.
I have not. Now, here's the thing. Labor can go on for a long stretch. I do believe that I took a brief nap during a portion of this. But at least I was there. I was in the hospital room. There are times in which we've all seen the Bill Cosby routine in which, you know, the woman going into labor acts as if she's possessed by the devil and you know, say, you did this to me, and all kinds of stuff like that. Difficult things can happen during the labor process. Having said that, attending a Washington Post party and or attending a fundraiser really doesn't seem like an appropriate coping mechanism to deal with the stress. But, you know, maybe we could just think of it as Terry McAuliffe wanted to go to his happy place. Wanted to go to his safe place where he feels most comfortable. And Democratic Party fundraiser clearly is that environment for him.
Wow. Jim, we'll have to leave it there. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.